A deal aimed at ending decades of turmoil in Chad. The transitional government and opposition have signed a peace agreement. But with one of the biggest rebel groups refusing to take part, will this accord hold? And if it does, how far off is democracy in the Central African nation? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohamed Jamjoum. Chad's Transitional Military Council has signed a peace deal with opposition parties and armed groups. The agreement is the first step towards democratic elections and a new constitution. Many factions signed the deal, but one of Chad's largest armed groups walked out of negotiations when its demands weren't met. Now, the question is whether the much-anticipated national dialogue will go ahead on August the 20th. Gillian Wolfe has our story.
More than 40 opposition groups signed the long-awaited peace deal on Monday, giving them and the Transitional Military Council cause for hope.
It was a very tough and difficult talks, but what is important is the result which we got at the end of this long process. And I think that this agreement will lead us to a sustainable peace in Chad.
The deal comes after 5 months of negotiations and could pave the way for a return to civilian rule. A ceasefire, general amnesty, and a national dialogue will be the first articles to be implemented. The dialogue, due to be held later this month in the country's capital, in N'Djamena, is meant to lead to the formation of a government of national unity, constitutional reforms, and democratic elections. Qatar, which hosted the talks, says the agreement is just the beginning.
So we are very hopeful that it will end hostilities between the different parties. It will move the process from military process to a political process and will allow for an easy transition towards the negotiations in Chad itself.
A noticeable absence from the signing in Doha was the main rebel group, the Front for Change and Concord in Chad. Or fact.
I think at the beginning we were a little bit sure that fact will not sign.
Chad, one of the poorest countries in the Sahel, has been locked in internal conflict for decades. Fighting among armed groups has forced hundreds of thousands of people from their homes. When Mohamed Deby replaced his late father as president last year, he promised political reform and launched the peace talks that led to the Doha Accord. Over the years, dozens of peace agreements have failed. But many here say that after 60 years of conflict, Chadians are tired of war and ready for peace. For Inside Story, Gillian Wolfe.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests from the Chadian capital in N'Djamena. We have Ramaji Hoinathi, a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. In Barcelona is Enrique Pico, director of the Central Africa Project at International Crisis Group. And in Oslo is Andrew Yao Chi, senior researcher at the Norwegian Institute of International Affairs, specializing in security issues in Africa. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Ramaji, let me start with you today. How many groups and factions ultimately signed this agreement? How many didn't sign or participate? And do you believe that this agreement can lead to a sustainable peace in Chad?
I think that in all we have around 50 groups that were in the talks in Doha. And up today we know that there is about 43 groups that finally signed the agreement with the transitional government. And in the other side, we have around nine groups that didn't sign this agreement. What we could say regarding the composition of the different groups, those that signed or those that didn't sign, within those that signed, we have some major rebel groups like the UFR, led by RDB. We also have the movement led by the General Mamad Nouri. That's within the biggest groups that signed. But in the other side, we have still the fact that is the front for Concord, that didn't sign the agreement. And this is something that is worthy to notice, because we have to recall that the last fightings in which the President Deby got killed were opposing this very movement through the National Army. And this is to mean that the fact is one of the main military groups that are opposing to the actual regime. So meaning that we have a deal, but since one of the major groups is not part of this deal, we don't have this kind of general peace agreement that have been expected from the beginning.
Enrique, you heard Ramaji there talk about the fact that not all rebel groups and factions signed this accord. And one of the big worries is the fact that the Front for Change and Concord in Chad, a group that is known as FACT, that's the main rebel group, that they refused to sign this accord despite last-minute efforts by Qatar's mediators. The fact that they haven't signed, the fact that other groups have not signed on to this, how worrying is that?
Well, it creates a lot of uncertainty about the future, not only of the transitional process, but about the overall peace in the country. We always have to remember that this peace deal has to be framed in a much broader framework, which is the one of the transition. The gathering in Doha and the agreement was supposed to be only the first step to bring rebel groups to the national and inclusive national dialogue that is supposed to start next week in N'Djamena. So the fact that one of the major armed group has not signed this preliminary agreement and will not be included in the national dialogue in the country is already creates the condition for further negotiation on one side that might also weaken the agreement that has been already signed, or for a return to the rebellion and for other offensive or attacks, as we had in the past, only last year. So it's still too early to say what are the next steps, but it's sure that something is already missed in the national dialogue that is going to start next week.
Andrew, I saw you nodding along to some of what Enrique was saying, so I'm going to let you jump in. But I also want to ask you, from your perspective, if a lasting peace is not achieved with this accord, how is that going to impact other countries in the region, other countries in Central Africa?
Well, I think for me, the key challenge here is that even if you did have an agreement that was met and it was signed, you would still need to be able to implement that agreement in practice. And that tends to be a challenge with most African states. Now, regionally, the challenge here that I foresee is that it could continue to spill over into other countries where some groups have harbored, I'm thinking here of Darfur as well and other places, where it creates sort of a hospice for these groups to hide, but also to play political mind game between different states as well. So on the larger scale, what it could do is create this continuous regional instability. But also I'm thinking the wider picture here is really about Chad's contributions to African security. We've seen a rise of Chad of the last decade, particularly in larger African missions. I'm thinking here of the Multinational Joint Task Force in the Lake Chad Basin, the G5 Sahel, even the UN mission. And so, you know, if you have insecurity at home, eventually at some point these troops could be sent back to deal with the insecurity amongst the groups that haven't signed. And so the wider challenge, or should I say concern for me, is that if this is not resolved, or if there isn't a meaningful process that is put in place to try and bring some of these groups that have said, the nine groups that have said, actually, no, we don't really part of this agreement, then what happens there on that dynamic? And so that is the space that we need to be looking at as well, long term here.
And Andrew, you know, since you brought this up, I mean, when it comes to efforts in combating armed groups fighting in the region, how significant a role does Chad play in those efforts?
Well, I think less so with armed groups, but more so with terrorists. And there are those on the panel who will be able to talk to this matter. But particularly with terrorist groups, Boko Haram, is in the Lake Chad Basin and other groups as well who roam across tri-border areas or the regional areas. That is a challenge. But also Chad has been, I would say, at the forefront of trying to deal with that challenge, particularly because other states or member states of that region within ECOWAS haven't always been as forthcoming, but also being equipped and rapidly being able to deal with that challenge. So for me, I think that is a concern. If long term, forces are then brought back home to have to deal with this challenge, then what happens to this gap? We're already seeing this with the G5 Sahel, where, for example, Mali has pulled out from there. There's a gap that needs to be filled. Again, you know, Chad has been under previous leadership has been at the forefront of dealing with this. But this, again, if you have this insecurity internally, which has always been there to say that, but if it continues, it could mean that troops are deployed from one area to the other to deal with that, and that long term isn't good for the region.
Enrique, you mentioned a moment ago that this agreement is supposed to pave the way for a national dialogue, which is supposed to begin in N'Djamena later this month. Do you believe that that timeline will actually be met, that this broader national reconciliation dialogue can actually start as it is scheduled to start this month?
Well, it's likely to be delayed again, I think, because even though the committee to prepare the dialogue works on the preparation since the beginning of the year, end of last year, because the dialogue was originally scheduled for January, then delayed till May, and then rescheduled on the 20th of August. Even though, like, the preparation has been already long, the different the context has been also evolving in the country. So at certain point, most of the civil society organization and political opposition were willing to participate into the dialogue. But then after the events in May, the arrest of the leader of Bakitama, one of the main opposition coalition in the country, and also the discussion around the attribution of seats, about the quota of the participation of the different political actors in the national dialogue, this is making the context and the situation more tense, and an agreement hasn't been found yet. The political opposition estimate, and the civil society estimated, that out of the 1,400 seats in the national dialogue, 1,200 will be occupied by people close to the government. So a question about the legitimacy and the inclusivity of the dialogue is on the table since a few weeks. And this is not only about the participation of the armed group or the discussion in Doha. It's something much more entrenched to the inclusivity in the country and the participation. So this is something that should be sorted out before the beginning, and it's unlikely that will be done in only 1 week.
Ramaji, the Front for Change and Concord in Chad, that's the main rebel group, they said in a statement that their rejection of the agreement followed the failure to take our demands into consideration. What kind of demands are they talking about? Was this simply about prisoners that they were demanding to be released, or was there more at play here?
There was more, actually, at stake. The fate of the prisoners is part of the demands they have, but they were also having demands regarding the transitional Chad, to mean the way power is devoted, most of the power is devoted to the president of the transition. This is something they have been talking about. There was also the necessity for the people that are actually leading this transition not to be a candidate in the coming elections. It's something also that they have been demanding. They also requested a kind of parity in terms of participants in the inclusive dialogue, meaning there shouldn't be more people that are close or from the former leading party or from the transitional military transitional council, but there should be a parity in terms of representatives. So people from that part, but also people from opposition parties, from civil society, and also from rebel groups. And the last thing that they have also been requesting, and that is something that we think can't be met, actually, is the resettlement of the World Committee in charge of organizing the dialogue. If we consider that a date has been set for that dialogue, meaning the 20th of August, it's in 2 weeks, actually. So we doubt how the government can still, you know, reset the committee. So I think these are the main demands they are doing. And this is why also, at the end, they didn't then sign this agreement and won't be part of the rest of the process.
Andrew, one of the messages coming out of the the conclusion of these talks in Doha was that even for those groups who did not participate this time out, there is a hope or at least an offer being extended by those who did participate that they would like to see these armed groups, these rebel groups, these opposition figures participate at some point going forward, perhaps when this national reconciliation dialogue finally kicks off. Do you think that, you know, is likely to happen? Will more groups enter into this dialogue at some point?
That is my hope, that that could happen. I think it's crucial that that offer be extended and continually be extended. Why? Because if not, like as others have mentioned, you then have a non-inclusive approach, which means that you have these rebel groups who continue to sit on the sidelines. And that isn't good for the sort of the long-term stability of Chad and also other parts of the regions I've mentioned before. So for me, I think that room and that gateway should continue to be left open. It should be continued to be dialogue should continue to be used to open that gateway. But I also think what is also crucial is that those who are leading the mediation efforts need to make sure that those who have signed the agreements to date meet the stipulations and the protocols within that agreement. Because if not, what you then have is a situation where these groups who have signed end up rebellion and then join in the groups who haven't signed. And then you have this further fragmentation of the agreement itself. And that long term, as I've spoken about in other cases, like in Sudan and in South Sudan, isn't good because then you can't consolidate the gains and the peace that you want to as well.
Enrique, the Transitional Military Council had said that it would oversee an 18-month transition to democratic rule and that elections would eventually be held. Have there been signs indicating that they are actually going about trying to organize elections?
I would say that there is already a general consensus, more or less explicit, about the fact that the transition will be extended. The end of the 18 months will be end of September, beginning of October, and it's impossible that by that date the national dialogue, both the national dialogue and the election, will be organized. And to organize a credible, fair and credible election, there is an entire machine to be put in place, starting from the census, then the electoral commission, etc., that has not been approached yet. Also because one of the objectives of the national dialogue is to revise the transitional constitution, the transitional charter, and to set the rules for the upcoming election. Chiefly about the fact if the member of the Transitional Military Council can run for in the upcoming election or not. So the very basic rules of the games are not in place, of the game are not in place yet, and the preparation hasn't started. The Chadian government is still looking for funding, for also for international funding to support this election, but we are still far from that.
Ramaji, from your perspective, what do you think is the earliest we could possibly see elections happening?
Yeah, as Erika said, actually, the term that have been set for this transition, normally the elections have to be happening in the coming 3 months. But actually, with that dialogue that is just starting, there's no way having elections so within 2022. And the earliest that the elections could be organized in this country might be around mid-2023. But again, let us recall the fact that even for the discussions in Doha, this debate in Doha have been lasting for 5 months, meaning that there is no way someone can predict exactly what could happen in terms of having the election. So it meaning that the transition will be certainly extended, but then we don't have any exactitude about putting in place all the machine to organize the elections, as explained by Enrique. So I think that mid-September, mid-2023 is the more optimistic delay I can set for this, I could see for these elections.
And Ramaji, if I could also just ask you, I want to take a step back for a second. Is there hope in Chad right now among ordinary citizens that this accord could either stop or at least significantly reduce any of the fighting?
Yeah, I think that the world transition process brought a lot of hope here in the country. But that also Think about the fact that the people in this country have been witnessing also a lot of protests like this one, a lot of peace agreement between the government and rebel groups that at the end of the day turned back to instability in the country. So I think that with the evolutions we are observing actually in Chad, the hope that have been brought about by the transition is kind of fading away because of disagreement we have with the most important rebel groups, etc. I think that actually the feeling here in Chad is very mixed in terms of hope towards turning back to the constitutional order.
Enrique, a moment ago you mentioned how one of the steps that is believed that will be taken soon, or at least the plan is for it to be taken soon, is that a new constitution should be drafted. How difficult will that be to accomplish?
Well, it will be quite a difficult step to achieve. First of all, because not all the parties, as we just mentioned, will be represented in the National Dialogue. So some of key military political actors will not be part of the dialogue, at least this dialogue, even though we hope that there might be like parallel negotiation. But also because there is no agreement on which kind of constitution Chadians want to have. During the preliminary consultation outside of the capital, N'Djamena, among the diaspora in the neighbor countries that have been done in around October, November last year, there were very hot discussion about the shape of the state. A federation, a unitary state. So all these issues will be on the table for the first time, actually, in the recent history of the country. And there will be a part of the debate beside all the issues that we already mentioned about the eligibility of the member of the transitional government, etc. So if it's properly done, if it's really inclusive and representative, the National Dialogue will have to work hard to frame the constitution in a way that is accepted by all the parties that are represented.
And Enrique, we only have a couple of minutes left, but how involved has the international community been in reaching this new accord? And how different is that from other accords in the past?
Well, the international community has been facilitating the negotiation in Doha alongside with the Qatari government. There've been mediator from France, from the US, from the African Union in Doha supporting the negotiation. But there has also been pressure from the international community towards the member of the transitional government. I think mainly to the declaration of the Chargé d'Affaires of the United States in July, who called the transitional government to change the charter and do not run for election after the end of the dialogue. So there have been pressure in many different ways, and the transitional government, I will say, that is now now has to find a kind of balance in between the pressure to end the transition, but also the fact that his decision will not be perceived as unilateral, because this is one of the main concerns of the stakeholders involved, that the transitional government is now imposing decision. So we have, compared to former agreements and to former dialogue, we have an opportunity to move towards something that is much more inclusive and legitimate. But still, we'll see in the coming weeks or months if there is a real willing to do so.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave our conversation there today. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Ramaji Hoinathi, Enrica Pico, and Andrew Yauchi. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.